Alrighty, the Haggadah, 2024, Tafshin Pei Dalet. Another year, another Haggadah Shir. And, you know, it's not always easy coming up with new material, but as we'll see, that's, you know, part of the job. Called Marbe Lasaper. Marbe means to come up with new stuff. Got to do more. You can never stop. And luckily for me, I originally got this for the shul, but I think I'm going to get it for myself. I'm just going to buy it from the shul. I never actually put it on the shul shelves. This is it's actually a set for all yontifs. It's called Otzer Pnine Chassidus. They come up with a weekly Dvar Torah. I actually found them online. It's like a weekly newsletter, and then over the year they've compiled them and put them into books. And I bought the whole set thinking I was going to buy it for the shul, but I might just pay the shul and keep it myself. So this has a lot of different Chassidish Vartlach that, you know, tons. So like, you know, every year you can find something else that speaks to you. So this is what I've been using the last couple of weeks. And some just beautiful ideas, things that, you know, you always ask, like, how am I going to come up with new material? How am I going to come up with new ideas? Chassidus can always do that for you. I mean, there are so many different ways of looking at things, and they're willing to take that flexibility. And, you know, the Litvak in me is always a little more rigid. You know, if I'm in Litvak mode, it's got to work. It's got to all make sense. It's got to have a question. It's got to have a Gemara. It's got to have a Halacha. But in Chassidus, they're willing to sort of put the commas in different places and read the words with different translations. So Baruch Hashem, there's always what to continue learning. Shivim Panim LaTorah. So a good shtick about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Shivim Panim LaTorah. I was familiar with that shtick. We're not getting into it. Okay. 70 faces, 70 languages. He was considered like he was 70 years old. There's a whole shtickle there, but I'm not going to get into that tonight. But what I don't think in my 4 years so far doing this shir, I don't think we've ever talked about the simanim. The simanim. It's an interesting word. Simanim usually, if I were to ask you when are the simanim, you would say Rosh Hashanah. That's when you do the simanim. But the simanim of the Seder are also simanim. And it's kind of an interesting word that we call them simanim. I'm not sure who gave them simanim. We know that later on in the Haggadah we say, was it Rabbi Yehuda? Nasan behem simanim, tatzah chadash v'achav. I think that was Rabbi Yehuda. Either way, so those simanim, that's later in the Haggadah. But Kadesh or Chatz Karpas Yachad, you know the whole song. So we actually, I don't know about you, I don't know why, I don't know where these things come from. I'm sure there's ideas behind it. That in my Seder, we sing it twice. You guys sing it twice or once? We sing it twice, and I've got my tune, and Ricky's got her tune. So we sing it four times. We're extra machmir about singing the simanim. The kids love it, obviously, whatever. And so what the word simanim? It's just a beautiful drasha from the Novominska, the Novominska Rebbe. Rebbe Alpi Yisrael Shimon, the Tiferes Ish. He has a Haggadah called Tiferes Ish. And he has a drasha here. Let's see, anyone here? No one here is doing Dafyomi, unless one of these unknown numbers is Dafyomi guy. But we just finished the second parak, and the second parak was all about Hashavas Aveda. We learned it a little bit a few years ago in the Wednesday night class. And we didn't learn this part so much, but the Gemara talks a lot about that Aveda Nechzeres B'Simam. Yes, Paula, I can hear you. Can you see me? Maybe turn your volume up, Paula. Paula, turn your volume. I don't know how to sign it to her. You know, she's doing that to me. So I'm trying. You have to turn up the volume, Paula. Turn it up. I don't know. I don't know if she's going to see that. Either way, so it says the Aveda Nechzeres B'Simanim. A lost item is given back with simanim. What does that mean? Simanim in halacha, what that means is that if you find something, you don't say, I found this thing, and then describe everything about it. You say, I found an amount of money near this building. And then the person has to come and say, oh, it was $17, there was a 10, there was a 5, and 2 ones. Like, they have to give a simon. In the Gemara, it's talking about what did the thing look like, you know, the texture of it, you know, how are the coins stacked on top of each other, that kind of thing. So that's the halacha. Halacha is Aveda Nechzeres B'Simanim. So such a beautiful drasha. I've been thinking about it since I saw it this morning. that in his words, Yesh Galus Mitzrayim Bechol Adam. This is very Hasidish. We talked about. I used this similar idea a couple years ago from the Sfas Emes, that every one of us has our own galios. We have all of our own exiles. You know, from the person we're supposed to be, the person we became, the person we wanted to be, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, we said we were going to do this, we didn't do it, whatever. Everyone's got their own galus. That we were supposed to do this, and we went away from that. We were exiled from that reality, from that hope, that aspiration. We weren't there. And therefore, we're a little lost. We are all avedas. We are all lost items. Right? I don't know, but my kids love Toy Story. So I think there's a concept in Toy Story being like a lost toy. Either way, we're all lost items. And so how do we get ourselves back? So obviously we could wait to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. But the truth is, says the Navaminsky Rebbe, that the Seder, the Haggadah itself, is a moment where we can find ourselves. And he says, Aveda nechzeres besimanim. Just like when it comes to the physical item which is lost, that in Bava Metzia we say, you get back that lost item, when you can give simanim, when you can define it, describe it, explain what it is, so too when it comes to the Seder night. We go through the simanim, kadesh, orchatz, karpas, yachatz, all of these little, levels, all of these dargas, these stepping stones, are there to find ourselves, aveda nechzer b'simanim. We are trying to reclaim our identities on Pesach. You can take this in an individual way, right? As I said before, galus yeshno b'chol adam, that everyone's got a galus, everyone's got an exile, and through the Seder, we find ourselves, our own spiritual selves. You could say generally about the Jewish people, it's unbelievable the amount of traction that the Leil HaSeder gets, the Haggadah gets, even among the least frum Jews, There are some holidays that take and some holidays that don't take, Hanukkah, they like that one, right? Sukkot, not so much. It's a little bit of a schlep. And, Hanukkah, they like, but Purim, not so much. There's some, depends who you ask. Tu B'Shvat, maybe a little bit more because it's cultural. But then you get into Shavuos. So what is Shavuos? A Feast of the Tabernacles, right? Anyone who's worked for a non-Jewish employer knows, the struggle of explaining Shavuos, because there's another Jew in the office that never heard of the thing. So this guy's Jewish. He never heard of it. Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaKippur, they've heard of all those. But sometimes they cook. But when it comes to the Seder night, everyone goes to their bubby. Everyone goes to their family, right? It's the time where Aveda Nechzeres B'Simanim. It's these moments of the Seder that we all collectively come back to our roots. We come back not just to the roots in terms of the non-religious Jew that's coming back to their family and understanding it and going through the motions of the Seder, but also in terms of us finding our own history. A couple of years ago, my Shabbos Agadol Drasha, for those who remember, was talking about the stories we carry, the importance of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, but also what the value of having a Sipur is, the value of having a story, and how we're all part of a story. And to the extent that we can connect, this is data-driven, besides the fact that it's halacha-driven. It's data-driven. Science shows us that a person has a greater sense of their own personal identity when they can see it as the unfolding of a greater narrative. Not their own, but their families, their peoples, their nations, their religions, whatever it is. And that's what we do with Seder night. The Seder night, we tell a story, but we don't just tell a story. We tell a story about ourselves, about our history, about our family. And that's what I think the Navamitzk is getting at here also. Aveda nechzeres b'simanim, we are all lost to some extent. Obviously, we think we're not lost, but there are parts of us that are lost. But when we go through the Seder night, we find ourselves. We come back to our roots. We come back to what Klal Yisrael means, what Klal Yisrael was. And that's what it means. Aveda nechzera b'simanim, lost items, are returned through simanim. We, the lost people of mitzvos or other things that we could be doing better, the things that we've lost in life, they are brought back. We are reclaiming our identities by going through the simanim. This is a beautiful concept about why we have the simanim. We've spoken in the past about orchatz. And how it's the only one with a vav in front of it, right? Kadesh, Orchatz, right? There's Kadesh, and then there's the vav in front of Orchatz. Karpas, Yachatz, Magid, Rechza, Magid, Motzi, Matza, Mara, Korech. None of them have vavs in front of them, even though it's a whole list, right? In a list, sometimes at least the end of the list, you have an and, right? So it should be Halal Vineyard. So we don't even say that. And yet here, it's Kadesh, Orchatz. The or is a vav. So why all of a sudden are we doing a vav there? So we've talked about that in the past. We've talked about how the word orchatz, like we say by taking out the Torah, bay on arachitz, that in Hashem we trust. So different explanations will give different drushes about, different commentaries give different explanations about what the rachatz there is. Right, Kaddish or Chatz, we're not just saying Kiddush, but we're believing in Hashem. I said in the past, Kaddish or Chatz, that we should make Kiddush, and it should be a good Kiddush, that we do say it right, that we should be believed, we should be trusted, that we can be stewards of the tradition of the Jewish people. So I'm going to talk not about the Vav this time, but more about Rachatz. Why are we washing our hands? And of course, there's a literal explanation, which is historical, that we used to wash our hands for Tumah and Tahara purposes. Maybe we are, on this night, we're reenacting the Beis HaMikdash practices again, and therefore we're washing our hands before we have anything which is dipped, in this case, a vegetable in salt water. But you could explain otherwise. And this is from Rav Yitzchak Amshinover. The Amshinover explains, based on Gemara and Brachos. The Gemara and Brachos says that a man who gets up in the morning, washes his hands, puts on tefillin and davens, it's as if he's brought a carbon on the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, and he quotes a pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk says, I think I wrote it down, Erchas nikayon kapai, nikyon kapai, that I will wash, clean my hands, and then it says, Va'asov aval mizbeach, something like that, and I will go to the mizbeach. So the Gemara Darshan says, if you look at Rashi over there, Rashi says, the pasuk can't be taken literally, because Erchas nikayon kapai is not good enough for the Beis HaMikdash. Right, if you're a Kohen going to do the avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, so then you gotta go in the mikvah. You can't just wash your hands, and you gotta wash your feet. Right, there's the kiyor, the whole thing. So, so Rashi says, "Schar rechitzas kapav." This is referring to the person that davens. Schar rechitzas kapav ki ilu taval kol gufo. That when we wash our hands, it's as if we're going in the mikvah. That's what Rashi says. Okay, good fodder for a drasha, and here it goes. The Amshinover says like this. When we come to Karpas, what we're essentially doing is, we're doing like the Kohen Gadol used to do at Yom Kippur. At Yom Kippur, he would do one avoda, go in the mikvah, and then do another avoda, right? In between every single thing that the Kohen Gadol did, he would go into the mikvah again. You can read the whole process in the Mishnayos and Yoma, most of which we talk about Yom Kippur morning. At that point, it might be afternoon. But it's, you know, in Musaf, the recollection of the avoda of Yom Kippur. So, and every single avoda he does, he goes into the mikvah. Now, I want to extend that. In here, it doesn't really explain it, doesn't really expand upon that too much. I want to expand on that a little bit. Because what's fascinating about that drasha is that it's given for the sake of Karpas. Karpas is an avoda. Why do we have Karpas? You don't know why we have Karpas? What are the footnotes in your Haggadah say? Okay, oh, good, good. We've talked about that drasha before. Very good. That maybe the Karpas is a reference to the Ketonet Pasim. We know that Achashverosh had Karpas Utcheles in his party. He had nice, you know, I think it's wool or something like that. And so we talked about that Karpas is dipped into, according to some, the Rambam, it's Charoses. The Charoses, according to some, it's like blood, and it's like we're reenacting the tunic being placed in the blood. We've talked about in the past, very good, Adina. But what's the literal or the more nigla reason, right? The revealed reason for why we have Karpas. It's good that you don't know, because there's no real reason. The reason, according to the Gemara, as we'll talk about on Shabbos and Mir Hashem, is She'akira Tinokos V'yishalu, that the children will ask. The children will ask. Mir Hashem will talk about the importance of the children asking on Shabbos afternoon. But Karpas, relative to all the other simanim in the Seder, relative to all of the other things we do, Kadesh, that's a mitzvah d'oraisa. You're making Kiddush, right? Let's call it a mitzvah d'oraisa. And let's say Magid, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, most believe the Yigadah Levinich by Yom Ha'o, that the story of saying over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim is a mitzvah d'oraisa. Rachza, it's a mitzvah d'rabanan to wash your hands before having motzi matzah, which is a mitzvah d'oraisa. Maror, mitzvah d'rabanan, right? Shulchan Aruch, mitzvah yantif, to enjoy yantif. Yeah, Birkas Hamazon, right? Barech, that's korech, is at least a mitzvah d'rabanan. That's a minhag based on how they used to eat the Karban Pesach. And halal, that's a mitzvah, possibly d'oraisa also. These are all mitzvos. What's karpas? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's just so that children will ask. It's one of the simanim of the Seder, but it's not in any way a mitzvah. I mean, it's a mitzvah because the Rabbanim tell us to do it. That's a mitzvah itself. But karpas, of all the simanim, is almost the least halachically imperative. Say it like that. The least halachically imperative. And yet, says the Amshinavar, we're washing for that. We're washing for that too. I think there's such a powerful message here. And I'll give you through a personal message that I was given on, this must have been, you know, October 10th or something like that, right after October 7th. And I was on a Zoom call with a bunch of other rabbis and with a Rav Menachem Penner. Rav Menachem Penner is now the executive vice president of the RCA, Rabbinical Council of America. He was previously, I think still in some capacity, the dean of RITS, the Smicha program at YU. He was a Rav for many years, I believe, in Holliswood in Queens, for those familiar with it. Holliswood? No? It's one of the forgotten parts of Queens. technically. Who's? No one thinks that. So he explained to us that sometimes we feel that what we're doing is not nearly important enough. As Rabbanim. And he said that we all have this cheshek, we all have this desire, we all have this inclination. Let's go to Eretz Yisrael. Let's go help. Let's go work on the farms. Let's go volunteer. Let's go do, make shiva calls. And a lot of Rabbanim did that. But he said, like he says to other Rabbanim, before you start your day, I haven't taken this advice yet, but the idea is strong with me, that you should read the Parsha of the Kiyor. The Parsha of the Kiyor. What was the Parsha of the Kiyor? The Kiyor is how we recall how the Kohanim would go to the basin and they would wash their hands in getting ready for the Avodah. He says every Rav should read the Parsha of the Kiyor, because sometimes you get down in thinking that, what am I doing over here? You know, it's a small shul, a little place, not saying here, I'm just saying any Rav, people aren't listening to me, people aren't growing, people aren't, you know, what am I doing over here? But the thing that I'm doing is not important. So he says every Rav should read the Parsha of the Kiyor to remind themselves that what I'm about to do is really important. And what I'm about to do is my avoda. Just because I'm not doing what some people consider the most important thing in the world doesn't mean it's not the most important thing for me to be doing right now. And just because there are some things that maybe make it into, you know, Haaretz or Israel National News or on the front page, or, you know, it doesn't make it into anyone's Twitter feeds, that doesn't mean that what I'm doing is not an important avoda. And therefore, you say, he says, you should say the Parsha of the Kiyor as if to say you are readying yourself to do your avoda. We all have avodas. We're not all Rabbanim, but we all have avodas. Whether it means, you know, giving over, you know, making sure the Seder is conducted correctly, or whether it means, you know, helping out, you know, a colleague or a parent or a child, or, you know, putting someone to bed so that they get the energy the next day. Whatever it is, we all have avodas. And sometimes we feel like those avodas are not real avodas. And I think dafka here, the Amshinavar's point is more salient, because dafka by karpas, by the least important, relatively, the least important part of the Seder, that's when we're going to wash our hands. Because at that point in the Seder, we have to remind ourselves that karpas is an avoda too. That's also part of the Seder. That's an important part of the Seder. And it might not be motzi matzah, and it might not be maror, and it might not be the thing that you always look forward to. My kids happen to love celery. But it might not be the most, lofty, you know, not the one you write home about, but it's still an avoda. And therefore, we wash our hands as if to say we are readying ourselves to do the next avoda, which is karpas. Even if it's not a mitzvah d'oraisa, even if it's barely a minhag, we're going to wash our hands for that also. We're going to ready ourselves to do the avoda. And I think that's such a lesson for life in terms of all the other the obligations that we have to do. You know, as a Rav, sometimes there's a great dissonance. When I walk into the house, obviously I'm only speaking from my experiences. You can create your own examples. There's a great dissonance when I walk into the house after I give a shiur. And the first thing I have to do is go upstairs and drag my kids into the bath. So I was just giving the shiur. It was gevaldik. I wish I could, but I got to give my kids a bath. And then I got to, you know, forcefully tell them over and over, let's go, it's bath time, it's bath. I feel like, what am I doing here? I was just giving a shiur, and now I'm dealing. That's my avoda. My avoda 2 minutes ago was to give a shiur, and now my avoda, it's the same avoda. But we don't always look at it that way. And it's always worth repeating and reminding ourselves that we wash our hands as we ready for the avoda, even if we don't see it as an avoda, even if it doesn't look as important as motzi matzah. Karpas is also an important thing for us to be doing. There are other connections, but I'll leave it there. Yachatz. Does anyone know the gematria of the halach ma'anya? I'm kidding. Halach ma'anya is the same gematria as the word yira. Yira means fear. 216, for those who are keeping score at home. 216. I don't know this Rav at all. I've never heard of the Chassidus of Zhikavar, but the Zhikavar Rebbe, the Imri Noam, says that Yira and Halach Ma'anya, the bread, the Kliyakar has a shtick like this also, or a fine lunch, it's on the Torah, he says that the bread of affliction, bread of matzah, is supposed to instill within us a fear of heaven. Okay, there are different ways, different angles, different, you know, ways you can go about understanding that. But he says, when we hold up halach ma'anya, this is poor man's bread, what we are essentially saying is that there are different avenues of yira. There are different times where we show, where we express our yiras Hashem. What do we do with the matzah? We take the middle matzah, we break it in half. What do? I always try to get it so close that my kids fight over which one's bigger, which one's smaller. That's my goal, Seder night. If I do that, I've fulfilled my purpose, you know, get the kids interested. So I break the matzah and then we take the smaller one. What do we do with the smaller one? All the way around. I know. The Gemara says that the time for forgetfulness is 12 months. So you're all Yotze because it's a leap year and we've been more than 12 months. We don't remember. The bigger piece goes away. The bigger piece, the afikomen, wait for tsafun. What does the word tsafun mean? Tsafun means hidden. Also could mean dessert. Tsafun means hidden. So we hide the afikomen. And the smaller piece, we hold it up. We say, halach ma'anya. We have a beautiful tefillah in the morning. I would say it's one of my favorite. That's not what I mean in terms of favorite, because obviously as a Rav, I have to say that my favorite is Kriya Shema, because that's Mitzvah D'Oraisa. But in terms of the words being most meaningful, so there's a tefillah, La'olam Yehe Adam. I don't know if people are so familiar with it. Sometimes it gets glossed over. It's a very important, historically very important, but also a sort of calibrating our minds for the day, important. The words start, La'olam Yehe Adam Yerei Shemayim B'Seser U'V'Galoy. That a person should always be fearful of heaven. B'Seser, in private, right? B'Starim, in private. But also, B'Galoy, out in the open, in public. And this, by the way, historically was something that that people would say because they weren't allowed to daven in public. So they would have this phrase, L'olam Yadam Yerushimayim B'Seser U'V'Galoy. That we do what we can when we're in public, we do what we can when we're in private, and they would daven by themselves in private. That's why it leads into Shema, for those familiar with it. It goes into Shema because they used to have to say Shema because they couldn't daven in public. But, says the Imre Noam, we all have different kinds of Yiras Shamayim. There's some Yiras Shamayim which is out in the open. Here we're sitting learning Torah. That's Yiras Shamayim. We're learning Hashem's Torah because we were fearful of heaven. We're in awe of heaven. We want to do what Hashem wants from us. So that's public yira. But then there's also private yira. Which one is more important? Which one has the greater emphasis? The public yira or the private yira? Says the Imre Noam, it should be the private one. Unfortunately, some of us have it backwards. When we're in private, we think we can get away with things. The truth is, that's the more important. That's the one we should focus on more. That's the one where we're really developing our relationship with Hashem. When we're in private, nobody else can see. It's just me and Hashem. It's just me and Hashem. Only Hashem knows how well I'm saying my brachas. Only Hashem knows how well I am, washing my hands in the morning. You know, how well I'm thinking of the Moda'ani prayer when I wake up. Only Hashem knows that. That's Yiras Shamayim B'Seser. That's the one that's hidden. The one that's out in the open, of course we have to do that, but who are we kidding? There's ulterior motives there too. The fact that people can see what we're doing is itself a motivator to do the right thing. So when it comes to these two, the more important one is the hidden one. So he says, what do? We take this middle matzah, which we just explained, halach ma'anya, same gematria as yira. The bread, the matzah, is our yiras shamayim. We take it and we break it in half. And we say there are two parts to our yiras shamayim. There's some yiras shamayim, which is out in the open. Halach ma'anya, we hold it up. We show everyone, this is yiras shamayim. Here we are sitting at the Seder. We're all doing what Hashem wants. But who are we kidding? We're doing that because we're together, you know? We're doing the mitzvahs together, and therefore we're all keeping ourselves accountable for the mitzvahs. But then there's the other part. Then there's the other part which goes and it's hidden. The Afikoman, we put it away. We store it somewhere else. Our Yiras Shemayim is somewhere no one can see. Which one of these pieces is bigger? Which one of these pieces is more important? Now you're going to remember which one's which. Because the more important one is the one that you hide. The bigger piece, that goes to be hidden. Our Yiras Shemayim, the fear of heaven that we have when nobody else is watching, that's the one we should really focus on. They're both important, of course. But the one that we should really focus on, the one that's going to make or break our relationship with Hashem, is how we're acting in private, not just when we're in public. So yes, we hold up the halach ma'ayin and we say, this is the poor man's bread, but this is only half the story. Maybe less than half the story. The bigger part, the bigger half, is really hidden. And that's the Yiras Shemayim b'seser. That's what we say, lo'olam yadam Yiras Shemayim b'seser, uva galay. We have to be Yiras Shemayim in both private and in public. Manishtana. Ay, so many drushes on Manishtana. We've talked about it before. We're going to talk about it again on Shabbos. I think I've asked this question in the past also. I don't remember. Oh, yeah, I did. I asked it in Kaal. Manishtana, why do we ask Manishtana? There's no better expression of question asking than asking a question on a question. Why do we ask Manishtana only on Pesach? Yeah, of course Pesach is unique. Yeah, we've got the matzah, we've got the maror, but Sukkot is also pretty unique. You know, we got the sukkah, we've got the lulav, you know, we got the esrog, we've got the arevos, we've got, you know, all of the different lanings of Sukkot too. So why don't we say, why isn't there a Manishtana song for Sukkot? Manishtana laila zemik shebechol halilos anu ochlim rak babayis. Halayla hazeh, halayla hazeh, kulanu yoshvim basuka. Like, why don't we do that song? It's also a unique time. Why don't we ask Manishtana on Rosh Hashanah? Shebechol halelos, we don't sit here eating apples and honey. And tonight we're eating apples and honey, right? Why is Pesach gets all the glory? Why is Pesach the only one we're singing the song about? So in the past, we've talked about the insistence of asking questions and specifically asking of children to ask questions and how that's a focus of Pesach, Selbe, Sabo, Selebayas, the importance of family. We've talked about Vigadhu Levincha Bayom Hahu, Ki Shalcha Bincha, the questions that the Torah tells us the children are supposed to ask. So that's Manishtana, that's one way of answering it. Says Rav Sadok of Lublin, there's another way of understanding it, and it's Pritzadik, he explains. If you think about the other experiences of all the other Yontifs, all of them happen either at Matan Torah or after Matan Torah. They either happen Shavuos, Nasa V'Nishma. Who's the one who said Nasa V'Nishma? We did. We said that. Right? The holiday of Shavuos is our own doing. We accepted the Torah. Of course, Hashem was willing to give it to us. But it only happened because we said yes. Right? And when it comes to Sukkot, who exactly is responsible for sitting in the sukkah all the time, for expressing the fact that we're trusting in Hashem? That's us again. We're the ones that were sitting basukot, right? That we're sitting. You could say it's anani hakavod, and that's more of Hashem's doing for sure. But we're involved in that. Meaning, when we celebrate Shavuos and Sukkot, we're celebrating our own involvement. When it comes to Pesach, however, that predates Matan Torah. Why did the Makos come? I didn't do anything for that. The Jewish people didn't do anything for that. Yes, Hashem heard their cries, but he had already said to Avram Avinu, V'achrechein dan anochi, V'achrechein yetzi b'chush gadol. Right? That Hashem is going to take Jewish people out of the slavery. So Hashem is already going to do that. Hashem, Pesach is essentially, I've given Divrei Torah, which are opposite of this, but let's keep it, you know, our Divrei Torah separate. Eilu v'eiru Divrei Elokim Chaim. That Hashem, the Pesach story is almost exclusively done by Hashem. When it comes to holidays that we're involved in, we know those pretty well because we were involved. I mean, part of it was because of us. We said Nasa V'Nishma. I mean, obviously we can ask questions, but you know, we were there. You know, we were at Matan Torah. We were part of the process that created Shavuos. So we know about that one. And when it comes to Sukkot, we were there. We sat in the Sukkot. We did that. We don't need to ask questions about things that we did. But Pesach, when Hashem is doing everything, when it comes to understanding Hashem, we can ask questions forever. There are so many questions we can continue asking. There's no end to the questions of Pesach. And therefore, you only ask Manish Tana, according to Reb Tzadok, we only ask Manish Tana specifically on Pesach, because that's the day we're trying to best understand why Hashem did what He did, how Hashem did what He did. Right? You hotzi hotzianu, right? That if Hashem did this, that, and the other thing, it would have been enough. But He kept going. Right? We're trying to understand more and more about all the things that Hashem did for us, because we were not involved at all. It was all Hashem. And as we've talked about in the past also, avas Hashem, loving Hashem, is about knowing Hashem. And we can never stop trying to know Hashem more. Va'afilu kolenu chachamim, even if we were all chacham, this is such a beautiful concept from the Slan Rebbe, that I feel guilty I didn't think of it myself. Not that I'm on the same level as the Slan Rebbe, but the fact that it's so like up my alley. I should have thought of this one. Maybe I haven't, I don't remember. He says, V'afilu kolenu chachamim, the Gemara tells, we'll talk about this on Shabbos a little bit also, that if there's nobody else in the house, even if we were all chachamim, the two gedolei hador sitting next to each other, even they have to ask the Manish Tana, even they have to give Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. They have to go through the story, but they already know it, right? I mean, they don't, how many years you have to learn something until you know it? So that's what you're saying, V'afilu kolenu chachamim. So why? Why do they have to know? Two reasons. According to the Slonim Rebbe, he says, number one, I'm going to say the second one first, because I like the first one better. We say in Hallel, Hamanti ki adaber. What is the word Hamanti ki adaber? So there's pshat, and then there's the drash. Hamanti ki adaber means I will believe because I speak. Ki adaber, there are different ways of understanding the word ha'amanti, but let's assume for now, according to the Slan Rebbe, ha'amanti kadaber means I am causing myself, it's hifil, I am causing myself to believe in Hashem more when I speak. We've talked about this in the Mishle class. I talk about everything in the Mishle class, but there's a fascinating psychological phenomenon that even if you think something, it doesn't really hit home until you say it out loud. It's happened, this is so true. The times when I give a drasha, and I thought an idea made sense, and then I say it, I'm like, actually, I got to work on this a little more. And I'm like, scrambling in the middle of what I'm saying. But fascinating study coming out, I think it was out of China, the Chinese train station or something like that, where there were crashes all the time, and then they instilled a very simple policy. Every time that they would conduct or operate the train, they would say everything they did out loud. There's a new policy. And crashes went way down. The statistics went way down. Because the second you verbalize something out loud, it becomes more tangible, it becomes more real, it puts your mind into focus. Even if you're doing it by rote, you're saying something out loud, you're doing something, you're activating a different part of your brain that makes you more conscious and aware of what you're doing. I don't know if people have ever gone to, I don't know where I was, maybe AutoZone, to get an oil change. Some oil changes do this, right? They'll talk out loud everything they're doing. I don't know why they do it, but maybe it's to show me that they're doing it. I don't know. Putting the air in the tires now, or something like that. Cleaning the filter now. And it's like, okay, I trust it. I know you're doing what you're doing. I guess it's kind of nice to know that they're going through the checklist, but the point is that it helps a person focus. And so to Hamanti ki adaber, even if you already know the story, it still entrenches the emunah in you. It still makes a roshim, it makes an imprint on your neshama when you say the story again. Say the story again. Say it again. There's a, whatever. It reminds me of different stories, but I'm not going to go through them. So that's number one. Hamanti ki adaber, even if the greatest Talmud Chacham, it still has a roshim on you. Even if you know the story well, you say it again. Right, it's almost like a parent that says a story over. They never get enough of the story, right? My mother-in-law has this. It's not a minhag, but a thing that every child's birthday, I don't know if she still does it because they're older now. Every child's birthday, she says the story of their birth to the kid on their birthday. I remember when I was in the hospital with you. The whole thing. So it's meaningful to the parent to say it again. They know it? Yeah, they already know it, but it's meaningful to say it again. So that's the idea number. Hamanti kadaber, I'll start believing more once I speak it outside. That's the idea number one. Number two, and this is the part that I feel bad I didn't think of myself. I'm trying to get lekol echad, every single person, regesh miyuchad. Every person has a unique feeling about the information that they have. Everyone has a certain affect, perspective, an emotion that's connected to their memories. I don't know if people saw the movie Inside Out. No? You know the cartoon, the Inside Out movie? Sure, of course. It's a must. There's a lot of chachma there. There's a lot of things I disagree with, but a lot of chachma is worth it. And in the movie, if I remember correctly, I think all the movies also all about like different characters represent different emotions and they have these different memories that have different emotions attached to them. And it was just a fascinating concept to say that our memories, which maybe you would think are simply data, you would think that they're just pieces of information. It's not true. When we think of a memory, we are re-experiencing that emotion. That's literally what's happening. So the same thing is true when it comes to Torah. Different ideas come with different emotions. And when you give over the Pesach story, you have in your brain different emotional triggers about when you learned it, how you learned it, what the excitement was when you learned it. You know, yesterday I gave over a medrash from Shir HaShirim about the girl who was in the field, you know, harvesting the sheaves. So I first heard that medrash from a Rav, Rav Ephraim Waxman, like 15 years ago. I remember how he said it. I remember the excitement he said it with, and it still inspires me when I hear, because he's like a very fiery speaker. So the way that we understand, the way that we know things is attached to the way we feel things. So says the Slonimer, we all have different emotional attachments to information that another person doesn't have. So even kulanu chachamim, kulanu yodim asatorah, we all know the story. We all know what happens from A to B to C to D. But the way we say it, the emotions that we have when we say them, are different from person to person. And that which excites me can help excite somebody else. I never thought about the story the way that you're thinking about it. I never felt the story like the way you're feeling it, right? So, davar yotzu min alev nechnasin al alev, the way that we say it, somebody else is going to be inspired by it. So even if we know the story, and you know the story, and we've been through the script 100 times, probably 100 times for a lot of us, you know? We've been through the script that many times, so then why do we have to say it? Because you still relate to it in a different way somebody else relates to it. And I would go a step further than the Slonimer, that it's not just that you relate to it differently than somebody else, but you relate to it differently this year than you did last year. If you have an idea about children, right? You know, what's the word? Amaleinu ze'abanim, right? I think that's the word. Later on in the Haggadah, the good parts for me, all the drushas, you know, all the psukim that we darshan from the Medrash, right? Amaleinu ze'abanim, right? That ze'gidul banim, I think is what we say, right? The toiling, that's the raising of children. So if you didn't have children last year, or if you only had, you know, 3 children last year, now you've got 4 children, so now it's a different experience. Right? It's a different, your emotions to understanding, what does it mean, amaleinu zugidul banim? That toiling, that's the raising of children. Yeah, I feel that more this year than I did last year. You know, and even if you don't have more kids, you have whatever, you know, students, I understand what it means to teach students better this year. I had such a difficult class this year, it was a real toiling. I get that. This year, I get that. It's a different experience. There are different emotions that are connected to the story, even if you already know the information. So that's what Slonimer says. That's why, afil kulanu chachamim, kulanu yodim esatara, even if we're all brilliant, we all knew the story backwards and forwards, we would still have to tell the story. Mitzvah aleinu lesaper, I've made that diyuk before. Even if you know it, lesaper is to feel it. Lesaper, to tell the story, is to feel it. We've talked about that in the past. A lot of other connections to intellect versus emotion at the Seder. We've talked about it, if you remember. This is probably because I remember I've loved this idea for many years. I probably said this the first year that we had this shiur. You remember that the difference between the three matzahs and the 4 cups of wine. The 3 matzahs represent the forefathers, F-O-R-E, and the 4 cups of wine represent the 4 mothers. Both F-O-R-E and F-O-U-R, the 4 mothers. And the mothers representing the emotional drive of Yiddishkeit, right? No offense, but women are more emotional than men. And the men who are more cerebral, that's the matzah. You got to think about the ideas of matzah, whereas the wine, you have to feel the meaning of the wine, right? So you can listen to the 4 years ago shiur online to get the full brunt. There's more to it, but that theme goes throughout the Seder. There's the ideas of the Haggadah, and then there's the emotions of the Haggadah. Two different parts of the Seder. Baruch Hamakom Baruch Hu. Baruch Shenas Anlanu Es HaTorah. Sorry, I sing it in a song and I repeat the words. I think those are the words. Baruch Hamakom Baruch Hu. Baruch Shenas Anlanu Es HaTorah. Liamo Yisrael. There are no other words. I can repeat words in between. But Liamo Yisrael. That Hashem gave us the Torah. Now there's a way that you can understand Torah that's beautiful and that's informing and it's insightful, and you learn a lot from it. And that's what we do in all of our, you know, I try to do in all of our classes, to give over insights that are helpful, that are intriguing, that are informative. But if we look at the Torah only as a textbook, so we've got problems. Because the Torah is not a textbook. And before we say, Baruch Shenasan Lanu Es HaTorah, before we say, I think that I just mixed up with Dayenu, Baruch Shenasan Torah Liamo Yisrael, before we say, thank you for giving us this wonderful work of knowledge, this wonderful work of intrigue and understanding. Before we say that, we say Baruch Hamakom Baruch Hu. Says the Am Shenaver, that's the purpose of this phrase. That Baruch Hamakom Baruch Hu comes before. It is the context within. It's the context within which we have the Torah. That it's within Baruch Hamakom Baruch Hu that we have Baruch Shenasan Lanu Es HaTorah. Shenasan Torah Le'amo Yisrael. That if we can't see the Torah as its own beneficial textbook, it's got to be Baruch Hamakom Baruch Hu that we have this connection, this affinity to be close to Hashem, to do what He wants, and the reason we learn the Torah is for that. And if we don't have that context, so it's a different. It's a different experience entirely, different purpose entirely. Oh, I was going to say this one inside. I love this one also. I've said ideas that sort of skirt around this concept, but this is from Rav Chanoch Henoch of Alexander, who is also in the Pshischa tree, as was Rav Tzadok of Lublin. But he says like this, Mipnei ma nikra Rasha b'shvil ha-sheila hazos? Why is the Rasha called a Rasha for this question? Not such a terrible question. Ma avod hazos lachem? Yeah, okay, we darshan it to make it, you know, to make it sound worse than it is. Could it be understood, l'kav zchus? Couldn't we understand, what is this work to you? It's clearly meaningful for you. I want to understand it. Like, why is it so bad? Dihine she'elas ha-rashi mishum? Why is the Rasha asking that? Mishum shemiyayish es atzmo lo markach. He has given up on himself to say, ma ha'avodah hazos. Not, he doesn't mean, the question is not, oh, what is this matzah thing? I've never seen that before. You've seen it. You're a Rasha. You know what you're talking about. You're an older person. A Rasha is not a baby, you know. He's seen this before. You know what the matzah, ma avodah hazos. You know what the avodah is. But he calls it an avodah because to him it's a chore. To him, it's something that's not worthwhile. It's not something he can do. Perish kama kasha ha'avodah hazos. How difficult this is. Lachem. Va'anu, and we, why are you bothering yourself with this difficult task, with this avodah? Va'anu guruim biyoser. We are very low down. We are so worthless. Shechatanu. Because we've sinned. Ve'eich anu yecholim leilech la'avodas Hashem. Why are you doing the avodah? It's so difficult, and it's not going to help you in the end of the day either. Because we're all sinners. We're all doing, you know, we're all falling short. So you're going to do this mitzvah, and it's not going to help you at all, because you're already sinning. You're already doing the wrong things. Uv emes, says Rav Chanoch Henoch, uv emes, in truth, that is the most important essence of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Shehayinu b'madrega tachtona ma'od. Yes, we were all sinners in Mitzrayim too. Shebemadrega tachtona ma'od. She'im lo hayinu nigalim b'zeh harega. And if we weren't saved at that exact moment, hayinu nishkaim chas v'shalom, the measure says, we would have gotten to the 50th lowest level, right? Im kein, Adraba, Zehu Ikar Hanes. That's the main part of the miracle. What? She'anachdu be'atzmenu lo hayinu re'uyim klal le'zehagula. That specifically is the point. We did not deserve to be taken out, as we said earlier about Ma'aneh Shetanu from Rav Tzadok. This is the one time that Hashem, it's completely because Hashem did it. We had nothing to, we had no involvement. We'll leave out the B'damai Chayi, which is a very important concept too, but I can't take it there. Because of Hashem's great mercy, He took us out. If you, the Russia, is asking this, that's why we say b'ikar. How is this against the essence of Yetzias Mitzrayim? Because the essence of Yetzias Mitzrayim is the belief that even if you're at the lowest of your lows, Hashem is still going to take you out. Even the lowest of the lowest of the Jewish people were taken out. He is rejecting the main tenet, not just a concept, but the main kafar bi'ikar. The ikar of Yetzias Mitzrayim is the fact that we can be so low, and we can have sins, and we can have done things wrong. But nonetheless, Hashem is going to take us out. And I love this first line, where he says, "Dihine." You know what the problem with Russia is? He's miyayish es atzmo. His problem is not that he's accusing other people. This problem is that he's accusing himself. The problem is that he's given up on his own. He's given up on his own ability, his own credibility. He thinks that he's not worthy of being taken out. And the other aspects of the same concept, the Shemi Shmuel talks about this also, that he was hotzias atzmum in a klal in that way. That's what we mean when we say hotzias atzmum in a klal. He removed himself from the klal. The klal believes that they can be saved, even when they're at the lowest of their lows. But the Russia takes himself out of that and says, we're too far gone. We can't make it. We're not deserving of Gula. And that's the biggest problem. If you're a Russia to yourself, you're only being wicked to yourself if you don't believe in yourself. We've talked about this also in regards to Yehuda. I think a well-known piece in Parshas Vayigash. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. And Vayigash Al Atzmo, I think the words of the Me'ash Shiloach, that Yehuda never gave up. Yehuda never gave up on himself. He thought at the end of Parshas Miketz that he had lost, that he had failed. He's going to have to go back to Yaakov with his tail between his legs. And then he stops and he says, no, I'm going to push further. That's Vayigash. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. He goes and he says, no, I'm not going to give up. And in the words of the Me'ash Shiloach, Eino Mi'ayish Es Atzmo, he never gave up on himself. That's the Russia's biggest problem, that he gave up on himself. And I think that also could be a segue into Masa Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, right? Masa Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, where he says, "Hani Harani Kaven Shimshana V'lo Zachisi Shetiamer Zichias Mitzrayim Balelos." I never was able to say Balelos. A lot of interesting drushes I was going to say about that also, but Acha Drusha Ben Zoma. What was Ben Zoma? I've said this in the past. Ben Zoma is the one that says in Avos, Ezahu Mechubad, it's the one that nobody knows, right? There's the Mishnah that says, what is, no, you're thinking about the other ones, right? Ezahu Ashir, HaSameach Lechkoko. Ezahu Gibor, HaKovesh Es Yisro. Ezahu Chacham, HaLomin Mikol Adam. Everyone knows those three. This is the fourth one. Ben Zoma says, Ezahu Mechubad, who's the one who is respected? HaMechaber Sabrios, the one that's willing to respect other people. And I think if you remember the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, when he was taking over the yeshiva as an 18-year-old, right, with the locks of white hair, you know, I think I've got it bad. You know, I'm in my 30s. He was 18 years old, and he's all worried. Lo zachisi shetiamer zichrius mitzrayim. Nobody's going to believe my drushas. I'm 18 years old. But then I remembered Ben Zoma. Ben Zoma says, as long as you're mechaveh de sabrios, as long as you give proper respect to everybody else, they'll start to respect you. Don't try to, you know, exert your superiority over anyone else, and nobody's going to exert their superiority over you. And then she says, then I felt deserving of making this drasha.
King Solomon was even younger.
Okay, good. Yeah. Worth modeling after him too. But the point is, that's what Elazar ben Azariah is saying here. And I think that's also the same thing with the Russia. Obviously, I'm not saying that they're the same, but a similar concept. The Russia gave up on himself. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was feeling that. He was feeling, who am I? Imposter syndrome. Who am I to say a drasha? Who am I to say Zechir Zinsarim Balelos? I'm just a lowly, You know, I'm just a lowly Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah who's taken place with somebody else who was, instituting bad, policies in the Beis Medrash of kicking people out. So who am I to take over for him? I'm an 18-year-old whippersnapper. No one's going to listen to me. So he had that same feeling of yeyush, of giving up. But then he remembered Ben Zoma. He remembered, I can gain respect by respecting others, and that's all I need. So that connects there also. But one more drasha on Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah. Lo zachisi shteyam reitzias Mitzrayim b'leilos. I had this somewhere and I didn't write it down, so I apologize. What does it mean shteyam reitzias Mitzrayim b'leilos? Specifically b'leilos. Most mitzvahs that we have are during the daytime. A lot of mitzvahs are at nighttime too, but you think about all the holiday mitzvahs. Megillah has to be during the daytime, and Lulav has to be during the daytime. Right? There are a lot of mitzvahs that do. What about Balelos? Zechiras Mitzrayim specifically is a remembering of Galus and Geula, of remembering of the proverbial nighttime. And it's easy to think about Yetzias Mitzrayim when it's Bayamin, right? Yemei Chayecha. It's easy to think about Yetzias Mitzrayim when things are good, right? It's easy to celebrate, right? The redemption of slavery from slavery when things are going well. Everyone likes to talk about a good story, a good feel-good story. But then you have the lelos. Then you have the night times. You have the night times which are harder to connect to that theme, that we are deserving of celebration, that we are willing to, be in a good mood. And you think about this year specifically, the type of, not compromises, but, mixed emotions that people might have talking about the geula of Mitzrayim when we're in the middle of a galus, when we're in the middle of a difficult time, a lila, if you will, a dark time. And that's what Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah is saying, that balelos, it's very hard. It's very hard to celebrate when it's lila. It's very hard to celebrate when it's difficult, when it's dark. And that's his drasha. And he's given extra boost from Ben Zoma, who says, Kol yumei chayecha. It's not just the daytimes, it's all of your days. All of your days, not the daytimes, but all of the times of your life. The ups and the downs. You still say Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. You still remember Mitzrayim, you still remember the Geula. Kol yumei chayecha, all the times. Some may, I think I've heard the same drasha about Shmon Esrei. V'chol ha'chaim yiducha selah. Right, we say that everyone, Kol HaChaim, all of the creatures, all of the living things, praise Hashem. So some make the drasha. It doesn't mean V'chol HaChaim Yidu Chasela, all of the living things, but it means V'chol HaChaim, all of my life. All of my life I will praise Hashem, even in a bad time. All my life, not just the good times am I going to praise Hashem, but even in the bad times. Thank you, Hashem, it could have been worse. Right? So I think is the message here of Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, but also specifically of this year. We'll talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we'll talk about the celebration of Geula, and we hope for the same thing, but we have to remember that we have to appreciate that which we can appreciate and not be overwhelmed by all the things that we can't yet appreciate. We can't be overwhelmed by the maror to not appreciate the matzah, right? We can't be bogged down by the lelos to not appreciate the yom. So I think that's a relevant idea for tonight and for this year. And it reminds me of a song that I always think of. It's really a story that was made into a song. People know the last Seder in the Warsaw Ghetto. It's very emotional. I can't sing it out loud because I'll start crying. But it basically tells the story of Meishela, the last Meishela in the Warsaw Ghetto, who was asking his father, Manish Tana. I still can't say it. But basically, he says in the Warsaw Ghetto, Manish Tana Halayla Hazeh, how can we, why is this galus taking so long to get out of? How is it so difficult? And he asks his father, is there going to be somebody to say Manish Tana next year? Is somebody going to be able to say that? And the father says, I don't know if I'll be here next year, and I don't know if you'll be here next year, but there will be someone next year that will say Manish Tana. Mirza Hashem, we have that faith, we have that emunah. to get through the Leilos, Kol Yimei Chayecha, to talk about Zechiras, Yetzias Mitzrayim. Even this year, Mirt Hashem, we should see Geulos and Yeshuos, Bekarov, for the situation that we're in, and experience the Geula of Pesach, but also the Geula of today. Speedily in our days, Mirt Hashem. All right, Erev Shabbat Chag Kasher V'Sameach.